doing for attendance?
I'm just checking now, Chair. There's few that are still coming.
Okay.
Give me a few minutes, Chair. Five minutes.
Okay, colleagues, may I just crave your indulgence then accordingly, and we will start in 5 minutes' time. I know it's 9 o'clock, and we generally and usually keep time in this committee, but today we are starting earlier than normal. So may I just crave your indulgence in that regard, and we'll start shortly, General.
We are here, Chair, no problem.
All right. Oh, Honorable Harden with an H.
Yes. We keep time.
Sia comply.
That's jig.
So that we can manage our time. We also have a session with the Eastern Cape at 11:30 this morning. So I'll request that we start. So Stombie, are we fine? With Ben?
Morning, Chairperson.
Good morning. Are we good to go?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. All right. Colleagues, on the 23rd of October, I received a letter which has been circulated to all members from the Honorable Retired General Olumisa, making allegations insofar as matters related to Development Bank of South Africa is concerned. Amongst others, he was imploring on the committee to consider this matter and look at it and making recommendations, including but not limited to a judicial commission of inquiry on the allegations that he had made. Accordingly, I acknowledge receipt of that letter to the retired general and referred the letter to Parliamentary Legal Services, who is one of our stakeholders insofar as advice and guidance on these matters is concerned, primarily because in one way or the other, the issues raised could have fallen out of our jurisdiction and therefore had to be carefully considered. In that, in the main, we operate.
Contribute, but you're recruiting.
I request that we mute our mics if we are not on the platform. We had to then consider this matter very carefully, given that in the main, parliamentary rules prescribe that the basis of our work is reports received from the Auditor General. However, it has become common practice now in this committee for what we call real-time work and real-time audits. Parliament Legal Services has advised that we can consider the matter if it is linked to previous financial statements or financial issues, as this is in fact our work. So accordingly, we have therefore this morning requested Honorable Olumisa to come and brief us on the content of his letter for the purposes of enabling the committee to make a determination at a later stage on how we will proceed with the issues that he raises. Therefore, today's meeting is a fact-establishing one to enable members to be able to interrogate and interact with what the retired general has presented to us, so that we can be able to test what he's saying. It would not have been possible to so accordingly, it's to therefore enable us not to make a determination solely on the basis of a letter, but for the general to take us into confidence on the issues that he has made. We take this action step recognizing the importance of whistleblowing as part and parcel of the fight against corruption. And in the main, the number of issues we receive come from people who may not be in a position to come out publicly on the issues that they raise. Therefore, it is encouraging when we have members of parliament or South Africans who are prepared to speak to their issues and we can take them forward. This does not mean, of course, we downplay those that can't, and we have largely remained always referred to the matters we receive to the law enforcement agencies. Accordingly, I would like to therefore hand over to General Olumisa at this point in time to brief us. I must say, General, we are a bit handicapped at the fact that we've only received your documents this morning. So I would request that you are steady and patient with us and you speak to the salient point substantively. And it is now 10 past 10, and I will request to then give you some 25 minutes as the first tranche, and the members will be able to interrogate that. I have also colleagues requested that National Treasury be here. The DG of Treasury will just clarify one or two things once the general is done, insofar as the structure of reporting and accountability and management and administration of DBSA is at Treasury. As he has explained to me, that this is a ministerial competence, but his team does offer the necessary technical support. But he will explain that relationship so that we can be in a position to refer accordingly on all these matters. So with that background, I would like to then request the Honorable Retired General Olumisa to speak to us on the basis of the letter which he sent to me on the 23rd of October. General, over to you. Oh, just one announcement, colleagues. I'm advised that our meeting is being streamed on Parliament platforms. If you are on the platform, please turn on your camera. And if you're not on the platform, please keep your camera off and your mic off. General Olumisa, over to you. General Olumisa, is the general still on the platform?
Yes, sir.
Upu, General.
Hi, General. I'm fine now, Baba.
Bam, General Olumisa?
Who's Carlos Malega, General? Is that?
Hayi ke ngoku. NgesiXhosa kuthiwa sivuke inde iqukuka sileka ugeneral. Akakwazi kaloku.
Hayi ke. Angasenzi loo nto ugeneral.
Masikhangele uMr. Nkwankwa.
Hello. All right, colleagues, General Olumisa had a technical problem. So Stombi, he's going to leave the meeting and just re-accept him and then we'll take it from there. Right, so can we just maybe be patient a few minutes as you try and get him back into the meeting?
No, it's acceptable, Chair. But I just want to also lash on what you have said. I see close to 8:30, we have attachments with 8 documents. Indeed, it's going to disadvantage us.
Well, let's wait for the general to come in and then raise those matters with him when he's here, because I had sent correspondence to him advising him that would have wanted the documents prior. So all he right. was aware of that. So can we
wait for him?
And please assist the Honorable Uma Zambane to access these late submitted documents. Okay, sorted. All right, no problem. All right. Colleagues, so let's just wait and then we'll take it from there.
Umfundisi ulinda ngengoma.
Efana ngani babusona.
Akho nto sinolinda ngayo, Thulumane.
Njengani nje na All right, so Stombi, are you winning with getting the general in?
I'm still waiting for him.
General. It's not
Good morning, Chairperson.
Yes, good morning.
Honorable, it's Lieutenant General Musiki, the Deputy National Head, DPCI, the National Head is engaged in another meeting. I will be sending in for him if the Chairperson is looking for the National Head of the DPCI. Thank you.
No, I was advised, thank you very much. I was advised that General Bia is in Cabinet this morning. But because this is just a fact-finding mission, that was in order. But thank you very much. Are we winning with the general? Let's phone him.
I'm not going to general. I'm going to general.
Siwachitha amanzi. Hlalo.
Awungawachithi. We are just trying to assist the general come back into the meeting.
Okay. It's already 20 minutes over.
General, are you in?
You see, Chair, one of my fears is that when we eventually get hold of the general, it's possible that while he would be busy presenting in the middle of his presentation, he might also experience the similar challenges. Yeah, I'm worried about that. So you must just bear that in mind, that we might be engaging.
No, let's not be...
I'm trying to be the devil's advocate.
No.
Let's wait. We are patiently waiting, Chair.
No, don't be a doubting Thomas. let's just be faithful and hopeful. All right, General Lolomisa. Right. Can the general be unmuted so that we may proceed?
Can you hear me?
Yes, General. Hello? We can. Yes, General, we can hear you. Okay. All right. General, the issue is, as I'm not sure how much you... it was better the other way, General. Yes, that way.
Volume, I can hear you.
All right, General, I'm not sure how much you heard earlier on before you cut, but I must indicate from the outset that colleagues are, myself included, are in a disadvantage that we only received your documents this morning. And of course, we had indicated that we wanted them prior for the purposes of preparation. And you've been very thorough in your submissions. It's a long list of attachments. So that does put us in a difficulty. But I think because we are constrained for time and scheduling, let us hand over, colleagues, to the general, because we've received the draft of his issues in his letter. And then he will refer us to the documents as and when he speaks to them, the annexures that he has actually submitted. So, General, I would like to hand over to you for this fact-establishing meeting to enable the committee to make a determination about the issues that you have raised in your letter. Right, colleagues, General, it's 25 past 9. If you may take us to 10 to 10.
Come again.
I'm saying, General, it's 25 past 9. If you may take us to 10 to 10, and we'll see how far you have gone at that point. Request that as you speak, you refer us to the annexures that you have sent.
Okay, sir. Firstly, Chairperson, I wish to express the UTM's sincere thanks to you and the members of the Standing Committee for this opportunity to address it. We all agree on the strategic importance of the GBSA, and yet, considering my recent experience, it seems as if it has been left to its own devices, and it may not be as well run as we hope. With at least one other state funding agency, the PIC, it was a case of where there was smoke, there was fire. I have relied on SCOPA for assistance so that it can look at the warning signs that have been brought to my attention, so that it in turn can apply its collective mind and decide whether that warrants an inquiry and what kind of terms of reference should such an inquiry be armed with. I want to clarify that I had been on separate occasions during 2020 approached by different sources with information regarding alleged wrongdoing at the DPSA, which I had compiled and shared in Maine with SCOPA in the letter of 23rd October 2020. I would like to start off this session by sharing new information that has come to light since my letter to you. But the latter part of this presentation contains the initial submission for the sake of completeness and for the record. In addition, the committee should please take note that some information had already, rather had also in the meantime, been exposed in the media. For instance, the Sunday Times of 8th of November, Annexa A. And I took the liberty of conducting two of the former board members mentioned in the article. I tabled two letters that were purportedly sent by Finance Minister Tito Mboweni to now former board member, Ms. Bulelwa Damase, which show certain peculiarities which caused some unease in my mind, is Annexure B and C. The first is a very curt and unreferenced letter dated 30th September 2020, informing Ms. Damase of expiry of her term of service as a non-executive director. She was given no reasons for not extending her period of service after having served only one term. By extension of this topic, it is also important to note that the DPSA used excuses to get rid of Ms. Damase and two of her colleagues, but it chose to keep five other members to retain valuable knowledge, skill and experience, and maintain continuity within the board. Look at Annexure D. It would be interesting to know what logic exactly set these two groups apart. For all the rationalization and defending the DPSA has done, it is interesting that it is at least two of the independent two who did not told the Godongwane line, who saw themselves unceremoniously shown the door. The second letter, now with the traditional detailed reference, dated 11 November, is addressed to Ms. Damase using the DPSA postal address. This letter is addressed by Tito Mboweni again. Why would the minister do use the DPSA postal address if he clearly is aware that she is no longer associated with the DPSA since 30th September 2020. The content of the letter clearly is the minister's considered response to correspondence that Ms. Damase had written to the minister sometime in August, informing him of the Cranbrook matter and her subsequent experience. The entire tone of the letter suggests that the minister regards Ms. Damase as a member of the board and very much still part of the DPSA establishment. Comparing these two letters, something very unusual is going on. I find it extremely irregular that a ministerial letter, and this is not just a run of the mill administrative letter, has absolutely no reference number. I also understand that the DBSA forwarded these letters directly to the affected board members. That is, it did not come from the ministry's registry, which adds another piece to this puzzle. Could it be that someone forged this letter? Does someone at the DBSA have the electronic signature of this minister? And what havoc are they wreaking? Another bit of strangeness. The new DBSA board was seemingly announced on 5 October 2020. And the information is available on the DBSA website. However, ordinarily, any such board appointments go in tandem with some media fanfare. But one would be hard-pressed to find a media article to that effect in the popular media. A simple Google search will leave you to wonder if the media outlets even were aware that the DBSA had a new board. In fact, National Treasury's website press release page does not even have a statement to this effect. One does not have to be a conspiracy theorist to read between these lines and arrive at very unsettling questions about exactly what process was followed with the selection process and appointment of new DBSA board, and who exactly the role players were. Now let's look at to the chairperson, Mr. Godongwana. I say here, Mr. Godongwana may have too many skeletons in his cupboard of the wrong kind. Just as we can agree on the strategic importance of the DBSA, we must agree that it is imperative that the chairperson of the board of such a government financial entity has an unblemished record. Aside from the fact that Mr. Godongwana is, of course, a well-known political exposed person, the government's due diligence reports that have been conducted on him, which I've seen, paints a picture of a man with less than sterling credentials. These due diligence reports, for example, state that one, around 2003-2004, Mr. Godongwana had been implicated as the then MEC for Economic Development of the Eastern Cape, together with Mkabisi Jonas, the then CEO of the Eastern Cape Development Corporation, Mr. Stone Susan, as well as the then Premier Stofile, in serious fraudulent misconduct involving millions of rand. In June 2011, Mr. Godongwana was accused of being linked to Canyon Springs Investment 12, which allegedly disappeared with 100 million in workers' pensions belonging to the Clothing and Textile Workers Union. The money allegedly went missing after a trust company he had chaired from 2007 to 2009 apparently lent money to Canyon Springs, which it subsequently lost. Mr. Godongwana and his wife had a 50% interest in the Canyon Springs. And although they were allegedly served summons and offered to repay 1.5 million, nothing happened and the company was seemingly liquidated. Another questionable deal includes alleged payments made by the Recycling and Economic Development Initiative of SA Redisa to Mr. Godongwana and his wife and another prominent ruling party leader. Redisa now apparently is liquidated or is in liquidation, allegedly made monthly payments of 100,000 to Isivuno Consulting from February 2015 to February 2017, which reportedly has Enoch and Tandwe Godongwana registered as its director. Recommendations were allegedly made for the Hawks to investigate, but apparently no clear decision has been forthcoming regarding this investigation. It is alleged that the minister was fully aware of these allegations and still appointed Mr. Kodongwana as the DBSA's board chairperson and given this information. I reiterate my assertion that by virtue of his PEP, that is PEP status, he should, in the first instance, never have been asked to head a government financial institution. And I find it rather disconcerting that the minister went ahead with the appointment having this information at his disposal. DBSA chose, I'm now addressing myself to the top brass of the DBSA, their reaction to the letter I wrote to you. DBSA chose to respond to the allegations made in my submission to SCOPA, which was posted on the bank's website on 6 November. I've taken the liberty of making an annexure for your ease of reference taken from the DBSA website, as there was no PDF document I could find. It's annexure E. I would like to make the following observations. Firstly, the response is anonymous or without owner. Who exactly is defending the DBSA here? And then the owner of the chairperson of the board. The chairperson and or the board, the CEO, the entire executive, the company secretary, who exactly, but you will see when you visit that annexure E. Secondly, that the DBSA was selective in terms of which allegations it chose to respond to, which I do not quite understand. Why not respond to all of it in the same blow-by-blow fashion it chose to answer some of the allegations and arguments? Thirdly, the DBSA was at great pains to refuse to give me information on the Poseidon Water Project and even refused my Public Access to Information Act application based on what I believe to be technicalities they chose to hide behind. Yet they chose to reveal information about Cranbrook deal without any worry. It is also most convenient that the DBSA commissioned an independent investigation into the Poseidon deal, even before the president attended to the matter as addressed to him in my letter of 17 June and 20 July. Go and see at annexure F and G. Fourthly, the DBSA's version of the story as contained on this web page differs from the information my sources have provided, and even from the facts as contained in the bank's own document, which I have in my possession. And what is under dispute? only a proper investigation and comparison of these versions would establish the facts. The DBSA merely posting a piece of text on the internet cannot be litmus test of truth. Lastly, DBSA is denying for the sake of denying. They specifically state about Mr. Kodongwana that it followed an enhanced due diligence. And I know that because I have seen this due diligence, as I've said. The point being, following an enhanced due diligence does not mean that due diligence must be ignored. Now that we know who the role players are, as revealed in the Sunday Times, SCOPA could call them to account for themselves. Let me now go to Poseidon Water Projects. For the sake of completeness, I here below repeat the information I had previously said in my letter to SCOPA on the 23rd of October, with a few additional bits of information that I thought would enhance understanding. Earlier this year, the DBSA funded a company called Poseidon, which allegedly had links to Harris General Partners, a company that had not been painted in a favorable light by the Mpati Commission of PIC. In fact, the Mpati Commission said that, I quote, Harris' conduct was driven by financial rewards to its employees and management, and not by returns to the GEPF. In essence, the PIC initiative created in keeping with government vision and PIC funding was privatized such that those PIC employees and office bearers originally appointed to establish the various funds and companies reaped rich rewards, close quote. Poseidon was allegedly funded to the tune of $50 million to conduct feasibility studies for some kind of water project in South Africa and other Southern African countries. At that time, another $300 million was apparently still to be dispersed for implementation of this project. It is important to know that Poseidon's shareholding is allegedly as follows, and the importance will become apparent once the role players in this parent company are revealed. The first is a screenshot of a DPSA document, and the second is just our rendition to make the information clearer. One of the funds is set up. It is CRIT's intention to, okay, let me pass by because I said this copy, but we can revisit it. The information about Poseidon, perhaps to the PEPs in President's group structure, and it reads like a veritable who's who of directors of public owned entities. For instance, it says here, the following PEPs were identified within the group structure. Just Tsepo Motlwale, Jabu Molekethi, Patrick Kola, Rohan Mora, Lungile Cele, Arthur Moloto, as well as Alex Mary Dugenwa, Ms. Renosi Mokate. It would appear that some of these PEPs are allegedly assessing government funding at the GBSA the same way they allegedly assess funding at the PIC. I had written to the President Ramaphosa about this case on the 17th of June, but to date have not received any response. Even before the president's response, I noticed that the DPSA had commissioned an independent inquiry into Poseidon's third degree and never consulted us who made the allegations in the first instance. Needless to say, the so-called independent inquiry with the DPSA powers that be commissioned and paid for would have a predetermined outcome. The Harris General Partners, Jabu Molekethi, Rochelle, Lugeno, Moray, have in the meantime taken the UDM and I to court in an effort to gag us from exposing alleged corruption relating to Poseidon. In the first instance, they withdrew their agenda application and were ordered to pay the UDM's costs. And yesterday, they lost another agent application cost with costs in the High Court. See Annexure H for the details of the full judgment. Quite a while after the Poseidon saga, that the matter of Cranbrook property cropped up onto my radar through different anonymous sources. And my initial sense that something was wrong at the DPSA received confirmation. The entire saga relates to the alleged mismanagement and maladministration of three loans that DPSA had allegedly extended to three entities, that is Blue Horizon Investment 11, abbreviated as BH11, Moere Baruti Properties and Pro Line Trading 60, PT60, all which apparently form part of Central Property. The total of the outstanding loans allegedly stood at 426, including accumulated interest, and there were no evidence of any repayment since dispersing the loans in the mid-2000s, aside from an alleged partial repayment on the part of the BH11 loan. In the end, the DBSA allegedly approved the write-off of hundreds of millions of rands in interest, according to Induplan rule, but also wrote off a 259 rands. I again highlight some of this, of the recent salient allegations. Well, let's start with Mueparutsi Properties, Pty Ltd. In 2007, the DBSA loaned 10 million to one Shokeng Motlake and one Masupi Matlala to acquire 17% of the shares in Cranbrook as part of a BE deal. There have been no repayments of the loan after 2012, and no letters of demand have ever been issued for the outstanding obligation. No such an entity, Mueparutsi Properties Limited, has ever been registered with the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. The original loan agreements were very poorly drafted, missing registration numbers and identity numbers for the individual sureties. The DBSA does not have any contact or financial information on the borrower or any of the sureties on record. The loan was absurdly enough directly deposited into Cranbrook's account. The board recently wrote off this debt because it cannot locate the borrowers. I was, however, able to locate the identity numbers of the borrowers, which means the DBSA's Business Support and Recovery Unit, that is BSRU in abbreviation, did not exhaust all avenues in locating them. See paragraph 612. Blue Horizon Investment 11 Pty Ltd. In 2007, the DBSA loaned 124 million rands to BH11 to develop the Ledibang Eco Estate in Lephalale, in Limpopo. 65% of the loan was repaid, but this is unsubstantiated. BH11 was placed under liquidation in 2017, and the liquidator's attorney had apparently hinted to the DBSA at potential fraudulent transactions, and that funds may have been dispersed to the benefit of certain directors and to the detriment of Cranbrook Group and its creditors. The BSRU asked the board to agree to a carve-out in favor of the DBSA of up to 20 million as suggested by the liquidator's attorney. This is irregular as the relevant legislation prescribes a fair distribution of an insolvent company's assets for the benefit of the general body of creditors. There was also a request to write back the interest of 11.6 million rands, which the BSRU argued exceeded the amount which may be claimed in terms of Induplan, and to seize any further interest charges. In 2008, the DBSA approved a further loan of 125 for PT60 as funding required to install municipal services for the Spekboom River Estate in Burgersfort, in Limpopo, which Cranbrook would later develop. The granting of facilities to PT60 was as part of greater restructuring of the Cranbrook loans, which was agreed to at the time. This seems to be an odd arrangement for the DBSA to have entertained. The DBSA never issued any letters of breach or letters of demand to the debtor. PT60 continues to be in default with its obligation, and the total debt is due over 311 million, which reportedly constitute the total unpaid debt and accrued interest. Although the loan was secured by a mortgage bond, the value of the property is currently worth 51.8 million at forced sale value, according to the BSRU. The BSRU requested that legal action against the individual sureties be delayed until the underlying secured properties in PT 60 have been disposed of, in order to ensure the director's cooperation with the proposed legal process, as well as the right back of interest which has exceeded the amount which may be claimed in terms of in Duplum, and to seize any further interest charges in light of the in Duplum. There is a considered legal opinion that the DBSA Business Support and Recovery Unit did not apply in this rule. Correctly, in the BH 11 at PT 60 deals, and it begs the question, in how many other deals has this been the case? The DBSA is a response it published on its website on 6 November 2020 naturally disagrees with here, but these opposing views can easily be tested. It also appears that the BSRU has for years been negligent in its monitoring of its of this bad debt, and it wanted to cause the Audit, Risk and Finance Committee to make decisions that would in effect excuse negligence. There's also allegedly been a conspicuous material non-disclosure by BSRU in its reporting memo to the board, and that false assurances were also allegedly given that entities on non-performing lists were in fact being monitored. There are clear signs that this entire transaction might constitute BE fronting, and that the DBSA has, whether it be wittingly or unwittingly, be a party to that. And now that the BSRU has woken up to the bad debt, the board is seemingly being asked to depart from its fiduciary duties and to implement a total write-off on a transaction which apparently amounts to fraud and theft. Lastly, aside from the larger principles at stake here, there seems to be deficiencies in the DBSA's administration, with a cacophony of alleged errors, maladministration and mismanagement, e.g., apparently decisions were made without honoring internal systems, poorly written contracts, lack of identity and entity numbers. No follow-up was done when the borrowers neglected payments for years. The problem here is that where there is a smoke, there is fire. And this might not be an isolated incident of Saudi administration. A simple desktop research produced a prospectus of the group, Trendbrook Group, see Annex 1, containing information in some respects contradicts the information that BSRU presented to the board. It is therefore not clear who is apparently telling which lies to whom. What the exact picture of Trendbrook was at inception as per the prospectus, and what was presented to the DBSA at the time the loans were approved, and what the BSRU recently presented to the board must be reviewed forensically. That's an investigation. Let me now go to the victimization of board members. Earlier this year, it appears that the chairperson of the board, Mr. Enoch Godongwana, unilaterally wrote to the finance minister about two vacancies and the reappointment of 8 executive directors, all of whom had been eligible for reappointment. The board apparently had no knowledge of his action, and there allegedly were board members who were unhappy with the entire process and the chairperson's action on the board's behalf without his knowledge. What happened simultaneously was that a now former board member allegedly dared to question the Cranbrook and other matters, and then had allegedly been the target of malicious action by the chairperson and the senior DBSA management, who, as far as the UTM is concerned, has shown their true colors. The seemingly petty actions of the chairperson include his alleged instruction to DBSA officials that this former board member's fees be withheld for 2 months. This allegedly happened after the DPSA management, out of the blue, recalled all electronic devices it issued to board members and some executive staff under the pretext of a forensic investigation to establish leaks. But it could rather seem like an effort to tamper with ICT to cover acts of corruption by the very same people who were being questioned by this board member. Remember that this board member had asked for an inquiry into the management, but the same management is now collecting the documentation with a view to make sure that they catch them out of the server. To give further context to the sophistication of this alleged manipulation, it is alleged that when the Cranbrook matter arose at board level, the company secretary asked for outside legal opinions on the situation. Those legal opinions apparently clearly advised that the entire Cranbrook matter had to be investigated forensically. That advice was allegedly willfully ignored, and the DPSA mismanagement scrambled to have board members access to the DPSA IT system revoked and electronic devices recalled, smack of wrongdoing and concerted cover-up effort. The former board member, under discussions, refusal to return the tablet was therefore for a good reason, and that laptop of hers to a properly constituted inquiry, given that she seems to have been a whistleblowing in that part of the world. Subsequent to all these shenanigans, the person's board membership was ended through what seems to be a concerted effort of the chairperson to rid the DPSA of a board member who would not toe the line of condoning alleged maladministration and corruption. Even though an independent executive search firm was apparently appointed, albeit under allegedly irregular conditions, Finance Minister Mboweni had still decreed that the appointment process should be led by Mr. Kodongwan, whom I believed had compromised himself with a clear bias towards the aforementioned former board member. I understand that Minister Mboweni was made aware that the appointment of the independent executive search firm had allegedly unilaterally been done by the chairperson in contravention of the DPSA's internal processes and without knowledge of board and without the involvement of the board's Human Resources and Nominations Committee. As far as I am aware, the minister did not act, which is evidenced by the continuation of processes that led to the recent announcement of the new board, which of course excluded the board members who refused to toe the chairperson's line. Incidentally, the DPSA board of directors is constituted in terms of the DPSA Act 13 of 1997, yet in 23 years, regulations in terms of which the Minister of Finance must make these appointments have apparently never been promulgated. This must surely be addressed. It was unsettling to hear that the troika of the chairperson, the chief executive officer, Mr. Patrick Dlamini, and the company secretary, Ms. Matobile Soazi, were ruling the roost at the DPSA to the extent that there are allegations that some board members were being offered favors and that some members were willfully being frustrated in fulfilling their duties. The fact that there are allegations that the company secretary has been tampering with board meeting minutes is disconcerting. The case of Ms. Irene Chanley. For Scopa's consumption, I also in June 2020 addressed with the president the matter of Ms. Irene Chanley and her inclusion on the PIC interim board, whose term has since been extended. Her company, Smile Telecoms Limited, received 1.5 billion rand in today's terms from the PIC. I had also written to Minister Tito Mboweni, Minister of Finance, about this matter on 3rd June, but received no answer, unexcha J. Since writing that letter, I had been informed that PIC had written off the 1.7 billion long ago. Moreover, Ms. Chanley allegedly also received a USD, that is a US dollar, 20 million DBSA loan, which she has allegedly failed to pay. The Al-Naja Group, with whom she is partnered, is a Saudi Arabian-based company, which might mean that the PIC and DBSA monies were channeled out of South Africa on purpose. This must be investigated. In conclusion, the request to SCOPA, given the President and Minister and the Finance Minister's inattention to the various matters as I have described, I believe it would behove SCOPA to look into the entire circumstances of the loans provided to Cranbrook and Poseidon, but in particular the DBSA so-called watch list of investors that are in distress and its register of loans and the repayment statuses. The DBSA's administration, that is the basics of record keeping, having proper contracts in place, issuing timeous letters of demand for loans. The implication that DBSA chairperson board or senior management overlooking and covering up of maladministration, mismanagement, and possible massive corruption. The allegations of DBSA chairperson and senior management victimization of Ms. Ndamase, whose only crime appears to have been her desire to fulfill the fiduciary duties expected of any board member. Bear in mind that this is a board member who has been appointed by the National Treasurer. Urgently, effecting the payment of the board fees for August and September that are due to Ms. Ndamase that had been withheld for suspicious reasons. The Minister of Finance be made to explain the strangeness around correspondence to Ms. Ndamase. There are two letters there, one with a reference, the other one has no reference. We want to make sure that there is no forgery which took place. The appointment of Ms. Chanley, given her track record and establishing what value she has to PIC board. Finally, and lastly, the phenomenon of double dipping, where one company accessed public funding in any form from more than one government funding institution, is certainly something that needs careful consideration. There appears to be a loophole in the system that seems to be actively exploited by PEPs and other ruthless individuals. The ease with which international entities can access South African funds as funds are leaving our shores instead of international funds or international investment coming or being made here. So, Chairperson, that is my presentation, and I think that the SCOPA would be in a position at least to take a decision from an informed position, given that some of the board members have already complained to SCOPA and even some have gone to law enforcement agencies. So that's my presentation, sir.
All right. Thank you very much, General Olomisa. I do want to say that we've also got a National Treasury in on the meeting, the SIU and the Hawks. and also Parliament Legal Services, because we are going to have to devise a response to this matter and the way forward on it. I'm going to hand over to members, but if before that, I just would like the DG of National Treasury to explain to us very briefly. On the matter of the oversight and administrative purposes and issues insofar as how they handle it at National Treasury, and then I'll go to members. So DG, just on that issue, in terms of where the DBSA is housed and how it's housed, and then we'll go to members.
Thank you very much, honorable members, and thank you, Chair, for allowing me to give you the opportunity to explain the organizational arrangements so far as National Treasury is concerned, the Minister of Finance and the Development Bank of Southern Africa. The shareholder, obviously, is the department, the government, and represented by National Treasury. On an annual basis, Chair, we have a shareholder compact that we sign with DBSA, the Minister of Finance signs with the DBSA, that basically merchants and the investment mandate that we will have to adhere to in reaching what they have to do. And that's solely the responsibility of the Minister of Finance in signing that. So I was able to, was able to explain to you that National Treasury then, for the purpose insofar as DBSA is concerned, is then like an entity in the Ministry of Finance. So you've got the Minister of Finance and you've got various entities where National Treasury also sits. So our status or status as the Minister of Finance normally say, our status in the Ministry of Finance would be the same as the DBSA, because all of us will report to the minister in a way as institutions. But then obviously the day-to-day engagements with the DBSA insofar as Ministry of Finance are concerned, the assets and liability management team would on behalf of the minister engage with the DBSA, engage with the board, etc., on matters that affect the Ministry of Finance, whether it's compilation of cabinet memo that appoints the board, or preparation for the annual financial reports and engagement thereof, they will then participate at that level. So the simple point that you asked me to talk to Chair was when I mentioned to you that ideally, and now having listened to Honorable Bantu Holomisa, having listened to the issues that the honorable member is raising, surely and clearly those then will zoom in clearly within the Ministry of Finance, and including obviously the department, the DBSA and the board, and all that matters, because the boards have got certain fiduciary responsibilities that they engage with. So our the National Treasury engagement with the DBSA in terms of day-to-day matters, including all of the investment decisions that they would have made in the past, it's essentially a board issue in terms of the board and its performance, as one can imagine from a corporate governance point of view, including then the Minister of Finance and the oversight that the Minister of Finance will have to play, assisted in a very limited way by the National Treasury unit called the Asset Liability Management. So yeah, I just wanted to share in our conversation that this is what I would have explained initially, but one would be more than happy to engage and hear honorable members, and if need be, one would be able to respond on any matter, including any matter that the committee or members of the committee may want to ask. If I'm competent to answer those, I will do that. If not, then obviously, honorable chair, those matters will be referred to either the board, the chair, or the Minister of Finance in this case.
Thank you very much. Before this Wednesday, I'm going to speak.
All right, on that very happy note. Okay, Honorable Dex, thank you very much, DG, for that particular contextualization of organizational structure. All right, we'll go to members. Honorable Dex, Honorable Hadebe, and Honorable Liz in the first round. Colleagues, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yeah, Honorable Chairperson, firstly, I think that we must express our gratitude and appreciation to Honorable Olumisa for the time that he has taken to put such a detailed report together and present. Yeah, it was very, very detailed and many annexes. It was quite a very, very long presentation. The presentation is actually dealing with a festival of corruption, a festival of alleged corruption that the presentation is dealing with. And it is actually, when you listen to what has been presented, it is no small matter. It is serious. It's extremely serious allegations that are being made in the presentation by the honourable member, and it is in fact scary what he has presented to us today. Now, I have read the legal opinion from Parliament's legal division. I've read the legal opinion very carefully, and haven't read it in the legal opinion. What has been presented, the financial irregularities that the TPS, alleged financial irregularities at the TPSA, it's actually a mandate of SCOPA to deal with this matter. Therefore, I would want to suggest that we don't outsource our powers at this stage, but that SCOPA actually deal with this matter. But I want to propose, Honorable Chairperson, that we do not deal with the matter today. Because I believe that we need to call in the TPSA to come and respond to the allegations that have been made against itself. So I propose that we do not deal with it and call the TPSA in on a later date so they can deal with the allegations made against them. I also want to say that when we call them in, that we must also request that they present to us all loans that has been granted since 1994 to all companies or individuals, and the status of those loans, to who was it granted to, has it been repaid, what has been written off. We need a detailed report from them, and also them to respond to the allegations made by General Olumisa. I think that the Hawks also need to answer here, because in the beginning of the presentation of allegations made against the Hawks, where they were supposed to investigate, some stuff was referred to them for investigation regarding Mr. Enoch Kondwanga, and the investigation has never taken place in the allegation made by Honorable Olumisa. So I propose that the Hawks must also be called in at a later stage to answer to these things there, because I raised this with the Hawks last week when they were present in the meeting. This thing of selective prosecution, I have a serious problem with this kind of behavior and the way they prioritize what must be investigated and what must not be investigated. So I believe that, yes, the TPSA must be called in. The role players that was mentioned by Mr. Enoch Kondwanga, by Mr. Olumisa, must also be called in. All those role players must be called in to SCOPA. TPSA must be called in, and the Hawks must be called in at a later date that the committee must decide on, where we can then discuss the matter in detail. But I don't think that we should discuss it today, because we don't have time, and we'll also give us the time to go and study the reports that were submitted by the Honorable Olumisa. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Honorable Honorable Liz, and then I will take the role. Honorable Hadebe?
No, thank you. Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. And we want to take this opportunity and also thank General Honorable Olumisa for the presentation. We must state it up front, Honorable Chair, and to Honorable Olumisa, that indeed we are at a disadvantaged position. As all in fact, these reports, except your letter, were only sent to us this morning. 8 attachments. I've only managed to open only 2. So I am not privy to the other 6 attachments in your report. We've listened to what you have articulated, and it gives us a sense of what is contained within those reports. Some of them are alleged misappropriations of public purse, which falls within the purview of SCOPA. Some fall outside our mandate as SCOPA. Now, SCOPA deals with financial compliance and or misappropriations of funds. For us to be able, Chair, to do justice, first and foremost, to the Honorable Holomisa and to ourselves as the committee, we ought to be afforded with reasonable time to engage with these reports. Secondly, afford all those that are implicated an opportunity to respond, be it DPSA and its board. And all those reports ought to be finished with us well in advance for us to consume them. We might have to refer some of the matters in the relevant state entities or standing committees, be it that of finance. It will be highly irrational and unreasonable for us to be expected to have a view at this current juncture in the matter that is highly sensitive. As you have correctly indicated, there are political exposed individuals. Not all political exposed individuals are to be perceived or painted with the same brush that of corruption. It means we need to treat such matters sensitively. I would therefore agree with the initial proposal as made by the first speaker, that we have heard what you have said. The matters as presented on the face value are of serious nature and ought to be treated as such. We therefore need enough time, Chair, to engage with matters. It will be illogical for now to start interrogating, questioning things without us having thoroughly dealt with the reports at our disposal. And I would like to propose that in future, let us not set ourselves for failure. If reports are not finished well in advance to members, it's quite, we are going to sound like a broken record now repeating the same thing. There's a saying that insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. We'd rather not engage, postpone the meeting if we're not finished with documents. Receiving documents at 8:30 for a meeting of 9 o'clock, more than 8 documents, Chair, it does not do justice. Let us not rush in engaging. I don't know the reasons. The General did not explain the reason why reports were finished to us on the 11th hour. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Bliss, and then Honorable Van Minen, and then Honorable Sonia.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and colleagues. Mr. Chairman, the picture is a bleak picture, and I think there is sufficient evidence to warrant a full-scale investigation. And so I would support to a point the proposal made by Honorable Dirks. But I wish to take it a step further. May I suggest, Mr. Chairman, that we establish it in the same format that was done by Parliament with the Eskom inquiry. And you will recall that Honourable Gordhan suggested that SCOPA could do a similar thing. I can't remember for what the issue was that day. Maybe it was SA. So I'm fully in agreement with that. It's really a great concern, these problems with the appointments to the board. Enoch Godongwana himself was a questionable appointment, given you may recall that he left Parliament under a cloud. He has a somewhat cloudy history. And so his appointment to the board of DBSA, one of the key financial institutions in the country, seemed to us even at the time, and we opposed it, to be problematic. But then, Mr. Chairman, I take you to the current Minister of Finance and his appointment of Janita John as CEO of IRBA, the Independent Regulator of Auditors, Board of Auditors. Janita John is under investigation by IRBA, the organization she now leads, for her role in the Tongaat Hewlett scandal. This inquiry the Minister of Finance needs to come and explain his role in these board and appointments as well, given the information that Honorable Kholomisa has laid before us. So I really do think the DBSA has many problems. I'll give you an example. The 3.5 billion rand loan they made to SAA in January 2020. I've been refused access to the due diligence for that loan by the DBSA. That loan was clearly a politically structured or motivated loan, and the decision was made in a matter of a day or less. And it's quite clear that a proper due diligence was not done by the DBSA. And I suspect that Enoch Godongwana played some role in that loan as well. So I will, when the inquiry gets going, be asking for us to look carefully at that loan, as well as all the others that Honorable Kholomisa has highlighted for us. So I support Honorable Dirks and Khadebe with an H. Thank you.
Honorable Van Meenen.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I want to agree with my honorable colleague. I think this is definitely something we need to be looking at. We are empowered to do so, but we do need time to study those documents and decide on the way forward. So I just want to add my voice to the chorus there. Thank you.
Honorable Dolashe.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. I think I agree with the notion that let's appreciate the report. Let's sit down with everybody else who's been mentioned. Let's start our own investigation if there's a need, Chair, without talking to issues that are not yet processed by ourselves. Let's just escape, be sure that we have all the facts. We listen to everybody that we think can assist us in this regard. Corruption is corruption. It does not have any other definition. And you are committed to deal with it wherever and however it has been done. However, we must be systematic and not be emotional about things. Thanks, Chair.
All right, Honorable Somio, sorry I missed you there.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members. I seek to agree with the proposition as told by all these other members, except for one point, which I would like the General to look into in terms of his reference on the due diligence made against Mr. Godongwana. He is making reference into a Belay Commission findings which were made in 2008 in the Eastern Cape in relation to Mr. Godongwana, Travis Jonas, and the late Arnold Stofile. The dead can't talk for himself. But I take liberty in this instance to advise the General to revisit the judgment made in Grahamstown in 2009 on the same matter, which sought to withdraw the report by Judge Pillay. And therefore, such instances quoted in his due diligence work on Enoch Godongwane would be rendered absolute in this instance. Jonas was cleared by the court on the same grounds, and therefore he can make reference on other matters. Others could talk on themselves. But I want to agree that let's give ourselves time to deal with these matters as other members have referred. Thank you very much.
All right, colleagues, I think that is everybody on my list. Right? I think at the outset, General, we appreciate you coming forward with the information. We take the allegations very, very seriously, and we fully understand that they need attention. Not all the matters, of course, raised are within our purview, but we will be in a position to structure a full-scale hearing of these matters in consultation with Parliament Legal to help us draft and frame our outlook in terms of how we'll deal with it. I do want to reiterate the point, General. You have, to a large extent, handicapped us this morning with the late submission of documents. And so that is why you will find members restraining themselves, because we always in this committee will make a habit of not wanting to make ourselves a laughingstock by engaging flimsily on matters. So that has not helped, and I hope that moving forward there will be a strict adherence to deadlines. Honorable Hadebe, the only reason why I somewhat was swayed was because we had all received the initial letter upon which the basis of today was going to be met. Generally, we have made an extensive presentation, which I would request that you submit that written text as well to us alongside the documents that you have tabled. There are issues which involve the Hawks and other law enforcement agencies, so we need to drill down in terms of what is before them. When I have to engage with the Auditor General on the audit outcomes extensively of DBSA and findings and matters there. And then we have to then interact with the minister. I think the DG has cleared the way insofar as the institutional arrangements are concerned at National Treasury and Ministry, insofar as DBSA is concerned. And then, of course, is to then put these matters to DBSA itself and to drill into those matters. We will need to, as Honorable Somyo has, in a way, sort of dealt with one matter, unpack the issues of that the General has referred to insofar as Godongwana, Jonas, and Stofile are concerned, and the reports that he makes, and look at those. So we do have a mammoth task ahead of us in unpacking and dealing with these issues and other whistleblower-related matters insofar as DBSA is concerned. But yeah, let me, before making proposals, colleagues, I was just compartmentalizing all the issues we have raised. I will go to the General, and then we'll go to the Hawks on the issues that have been raised insofar as them are concerned, and then the SIU to take us on board if there are any matters related to DBSA that they are dealing with, and then we will go to National Treasury on that, and then we'll determine a way forward. So, retired General Olomisa, over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and I've taken note of the reference of the Grahamstown court, but I'll check on that. Secondly, it's true that I was late and it was not deliberate. Since I gave you the the information last week or 2 weeks ago, I thought at least I would be in a position to expand more, but I think administratively I was handicapped because I was traveling. My apologies for that. So I'm looking forward to the hearings. And also what I would suggest you do is also to invite the whistleblowers as well, and also these board members, if they are available, who are affected, so that you take a final decision as to whether you need a further inquiry or not. So you might have to invite them, or they make submissions in writing. Thank you.
All right, the Hawks.
Thank you, Chairperson, Lieutenant General Musikiti. Chairperson, let me first appreciate the presentation as made by the General and appreciate
Lieutenant General,
the fact that...
Lieutenant General, if you may turn on your camera, please. Thank you.
Chairperson, let me appreciate the invitation that you have extended to ourselves and appreciate as well the presentation as made by the Honorable General Bantu Holomisa, and appreciate, Chairperson, the input that you and your committee have made, that we need to go back to the drawing board and check what was referred to by the presenter in relation to the matters that were referred to our good selves for further investigation. Chairperson, I can at this stage confirm that there is a report that was tabled before the national head of the directorate on the matter that is still under investigation as recorded in 2013. I have also taken note of the reference that has been made in the folio of the letter that is dated the 3rd of June 2020. Chairperson, if I may request that we go back and as the directorate, look into these matters as has been referred to, and the input that the chairperson has made, that we will have to come back and account on those matters that are on our disposal and give a brief and the status of the investigations that we may be having on these matters at later stage, if the chairperson allows. And I thank you.
All right, Lieutenant General, we have lost you there. You are muted. All right, Babum Chibis, the SIU, if there are any comments on your side.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Let me also extend the greetings to Honorable Bantu Holomisa. We appreciate the opportunity to be present in this meeting, as matters that are presented do present areas of maladministration, malpractice and corruption, which of course fall within our purview. I would like to confirm at this stage, I've checked with my colleagues that are responsible, and I'm with Mr. Pranesh Maharaj in the meeting, who is the executive responsible for new matters reported to SIU. He's responsible for case management and development of proclamation. We've confirmed, having checked in our books, that SIU does not have current or past proclamation relating to DBSA. We have also confirmed that there are no allegations that has been recently reported to the Special Investigating Unit. So, Chair, at this stage, I'd like to just pause here of course, going forward, we will then clearly be guided through SCOPA in terms of how SIU could be of assistance in any way. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, HOU. National Treasury, any comment on your side?
Thank you very much, Chair. No, we'll certainly also await documents that Honorable Holomisa has, including his presentation this morning. Certainly we'll bring it to the Minister's attention, and we will then accordingly await any guidance on the matter, including, by the way, matters that we are aware of that could be part of the presentation. And on those matters, we then can come to SCOPA at the appropriate time to indicate what work or process has been undertaken in addressing, including correspondence that is available between the minister and former member of the board, including any other communication that is part of the package that Honorable Holomisa has identified. And finally, Chair, maybe I did not at the beginning apologize on behalf of the minister, who is currently sitting in a cabinet meeting, so he was not able to attend this meeting, and that's why I was here on his behalf. Thank you very much.
All right. No, thank you very much, DG. Minister's got a deputy. You can't represent the minister. But all right, that's fine. We will put all these matters to the relevant structures. Colleagues, I think what we'll do is we're going to collate all the information received this morning, and Parliament Legal has been listening in, and I will set up a meeting with them, and then we will discuss this matter extensively and develop a proposal and an operational framework which we are going to follow insofar as dealing with this matter. We will look at it, whether we are doing a ESCOM style like inquiry or a full-scale committee hearing, because amongst others we might not have the time to place this before the House if it's an ESCOM style like hearing or inquiry until next year February, given the very packed NA schedule. But if we take a full-scale committee hearing approach, which we can set a time for, even a week, we can do that without having gone to the House, and then we can make our recommendations and proposals accordingly to the House. But all the necessary resources will still be made available to us in any case. So we will look at that, and I will request that colleagues then go through all the issues that have been raised, and we will then make member submissions to the structure and format of how we'll deal with this. Of course, we'll have to distill it in terms of what is our competence and what is not within our purview, and then take it forward. But what is not in dispute, colleagues, is that there are grave allegations before us of serious corruption, fraud by administration, and a failure to adhere to due process, which require our attention. And Honorable Holomisa, of course, will have to come in at those hearings to then speak further to the issue that he's raised. The issue today was for us to have him speak to his letter, as this is, as I indicated earlier on, a fact establishing a meeting to wisen us up in terms of what is there, because the letter on its own would have been insufficient. Serious details, of course, have been presented to us this morning, which we will have to deal with. I want to also indicate that, yes, there are whistleblowers on matters. We'll have to establish, of course, whether they are prepared to come forward. And I want to indicate now that if we have to use the powers of subpoena, we will most certainly do so. And this is a matter we take very, very seriously, which will, of course, then get our attention. I want to indicate that on the matters of a judicial commission of inquiry, that is not within our purview, and we are not constitutionally empowered to do so, nor do the rules of Parliament allow us to do so. However, at the end of this process of the committee hearings and inquiry, which we are going to do, to call in everybody, we will make a determination to then forward to the president if need be, on the basis of the facts he would have established, and then put it to him if we feel that is a necessary course of action, or transfer these matters directly to the law enforcement agencies. And this is why the issues of the anti-corruption task team are so important, because that is where coordination and synchronization of the pooling and sharing of resources, knowledge, skills and expertise comes in to enable this process to run its full course to a logical legal conclusion with the necessary consequence management. Therefore, those are all the options available to us, but we will, of course, consider this matter as we've already started on doing. And we want to encourage South Africans who have got information, who are sitting in the face of serious challenges in their respective spaces, and where corruption, maladministration, fraud takes place, for them to come forward, to interact with us, send information, and if we don't process it as a committee, we will certainly redirect it to the necessary structures and bodies to deal with. But let us not keep quiet. Let us not sit down. Let us not allow corruption to thrive on our watch. And therefore, it's important for all of us to actually do that. But of course, also understanding that we have to ensure the, you know, safety and of people. But we've got an open door policy, and I think maybe part of today was an active demonstration of that policy. And we certainly will cooperate within the parameters of the law with any due process. So, General Olumisa, I would like to thank you very much for coming through this morning to brief us. Let me check if there are no hands with the family group. Right?
Okay.
And of course, as I'm reminded by colleagues, we are not going to outsource our responsibilities, nor are we going to embark on this matter on the basis of joint hearings or with or joint meetings. We are not going to do that. Right? The Honorable Hadebe?
Thanks, Chair. It's just one issue that I'd like to request in future. And I take the apology from the Ministry side, but I don't think it will be wise in dealing with case of this magnitude to have a minister being represented by an accounting authority. We can't have an executive authority being represented by an accounting officer. So we really appreciate in future if the minister is not available, the deputy, because there are certain allegations that were made of the minister not responding to letters. We would have loved to get the sense and indication as to why such has not been done. Perhaps they are busy with investigation so that we do not reinvent the wheel. So it is totally from our side and point of view not acceptable that at least the deputy should have been part of this meeting. So moving forward, we need that commitment so that we are seen in action and in words that we do take our work seriously, especially issues related to these allegations. Thank you, Chair.
All right. No, that's fine. And that's why I put it to the DG immediately that he does not represent the minister. He is here in his own right. And the information that he has provided is important because it provides clarity on the institutional, organizational arrangements which can be
privilege. We just was there. And that is why I was making the point that there is a deputy minister. So I think that point you make is valid. And I think the DJ will take it in the spirit in which it has been said, so that there is no confusion moving forward.
Yes, right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you much. Right. There's a lot of work before us, colleagues. Let us release the General Lolomesa to the Hawks. Lieutenant General, thank you very much. Head of Unit of the SIU, Everything TV, thank you very much. And DG,
thank you very much.
We will be in touch and we will engage and we will be consulting accordingly. Parliament Legal, once again, thank you very much and thank you for the guidance you have provided on this matter ever since it's been brought to your attention. Colleagues, we are scheduled to start at 11:30 with the Eastern Cape following last week's botched meeting. But then I've received correspondence that the MEC is not going to be available today. He is in another meeting. Whilst ordinarily we must engage with the accounting officers, given last week's impasse, and lack of clarity and poor communication between the MEC and the HOD and the submission of three reports, some which the MEC had not had sight of, I have a heightened level of skepticism to proceed in the absence of a party which was part of our meeting last time and whose input and contribution in one way or the other triggered the postponement of our meeting. So that absence does place us in a predicament. When the proposed date of today was made, this meeting was not brought to our attention. So I would just like to hand over to members to make a comment on that, but that is the dilemma now which has been presented to us. Right. Honorable Tolashe, I see your hand and then the colleagues can come in.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I wonder if at some point you should not consider a situation we're in. When we call meetings, surely there's expense there. And when we had to postpone the meeting, then there's fruitless expenditure. And I'm raising this because I'm hearing you explaining that the MEC from COCTA Eastern Cape is not going to be part of this meeting. I don't take that kindly, Chair. Because now we aren't even sure whether the document... Yes, sir.
As you are speaking, I'm now told that correspondence has just come in, which now says the MEC says he will be available. I was given correspondence signed by, which I'm sure members received, which was saying he's not, but I'm advised now that he says he's going to join us. He will be here.
Chair, if he's going to join us. However, I want your office to please explore such situations, Chair, wherein we waste money and time in convening, and we had to postpone because of reasons that are beyond our control. For instance, the non-attendance of the executive or non-attendance of the accounting officers. I think it's important for us to flag that and discuss it so that we can have a solution. So that when anybody is not going to be able to come, being expected, everything has been done. The person will be sending the apology, she or he must also tell us now, how is he or she going to foot the bill of us having convened? I get to understand later that he or she is not going to be able to be part of the meeting. So that we don't get into these discussions in future, Chairperson. It's good that the MEC is going to be part of the meeting. Thank you so much.
Okay. Now, thank you very much, Madam Tulashe. I fully agree with you.
because the letter which was sent to me dated 17 November was saying that the MEC would be in the Eastern Cape Governance and Administration Cabinet Committee. And now I'm told that he has requested another MEC to chair that meeting on his behalf so he can make himself available. But the apology was there. That's why I raised the matter. So that members don't think what's going on now. I've got all my senses about with me. So colleagues, we will, I suppose then we have finished early on that other matter. We will take a comfort break and we will join in at 11:30 so that we can now log on the Eastern Cape delegation, upload their details, and then we will start then. So we can take a break and we will start promptly at 11:30.
No, thank you, Chair.
Just one more thing, colleagues, that I would like us to consider. Proceeding with the issue of BBSA, it does not seem like we'll be able to do justice to that matter on a virtual platform. So I think we have to gravitate towards normality and physical meetings. And so if members can begin advising us, I'm advised now that there is a venue in Parliament which has been equipped for the purposes of physical meetings. This virtual thing has got certain limitations and may hamper our effectiveness and efficiency with dealing with the very grave matters which are before us. So I'd request that we devise some sort of model and structure at some point so that we can actually return back to normality to deal with these issues. So I'm just putting that there for members to think about and consider. But colleagues, we'll meet at 11:30.
We are ready to go back to normal, Chair.
Siyakhu.
That's Jiggy. I was about to say, if Moses cannot go to the mountain is willing to go to Moses. So then,
you are not representing all of us. Honorable Chairperson, you must get other views. You must lobby for more views, Honorable Chairperson. No, despite what Honorable Adebe is saying. But yes, you must have, and there's a second ear to listen. Otherwise, there's going to be problems.
We must meet physically. I miss you, Mama.
That's the thing now.
What is the problem?